health, beauty and well-being, and sometimes sex. Listen to Radio Gorgeous every day now. Hi, and welcome back to Radio Gorgeous, the Radio Gorgeous Agony Aunt. I'm here with Dr. Jane McCartney, and she's walked in with quite a few problems today. Hi, welcome.
Hello, Josephine.
How are you?
I'm very well, and you?
Very well. So yes. Let's start then. This is from Lara. Dear Dr. Jane, I'm engaged to a man I love, trust and adore. The trouble is that I'm Indian and Indian born, but not a practicing Muslim. I'm really looking forward to the wedding, but I'm worried as though we're marrying in England and having an English style wedding, many of relations are now saying that they cannot come. He's told me in the past that some of them are racists. Oh, this is horrible. And this scares me. How can I cope marrying to a family who will not like me for what I am? But also, yeah, she's making a few presumptions.
She is.
Yeah.
And that was Lara, wasn't it? Okay, yeah. Lara. So you've got a few things going here. But essentially, the thing she has to remember is she's marrying the man that she loves and who loves her, no matter what. So he's got some relations that he's a bit cautious about. So he's warning her that there might be something going on. And, do you know, if there is, hopefully it will never show itself, and it just might be that she doesn't see many of them or anything, but it shouldn't interfere, because she's thinking about this possibly kind of, you know, implicating on her long-term happiness. But she has to remember that she is marrying him because she loves him and he is marrying her. So I wonder as well if there's a little kind of little bubbling of, you know, the difference in culture for her. She's worrying about it more than he obviously is.
She talks about it quite often, because she says it's a white wedding, the English style, and she's not a practicing Muslim, you know what I mean? She's trying to find her own identity somewhere.
She is. So she's kind of having this, you know, and I wonder, and she's not practicing, and presumably that's kind of okay with her family. They're fine with it or something. And maybe one of the things that she could think about is not exactly rush into a dual ceremony or anything like that, but a little bit further down the line, if she, you know, so felt that she wanted to, perhaps she could arrange something that just makes, not a full ceremony or anything official, that just makes a nod to her culture and thereby her family. And I think there's something kind of, you know, I'm sure there'd be something quite nice about that as well. So
yeah, so maybe she should embrace her culture more instead of the other way around, be worrying about them.
Yeah, and I think, you know, her biggest fear is his family being racist towards her, which, you know, unfortunately, if they're going to be, they're going to be. There's nothing that's going to stop them. But she can kind of, you know, not have to take that on and worry about it, you know, if it doesn't immediately affect her, which hopefully it won't. But yeah, I think there's something about not exactly, you know, reinventing herself as this sort of like super, you know, cultural, you know, Muslim person. She doesn't want to do that, it's fine, but maybe there's something she can make, you know, a little tradition or something. There's just a little nod towards that she can make it, because, you know, they are two people from two different backgrounds. No matter where they are at the moment, they are two people from two different backgrounds coming together, which in itself is something to be celebrated, not just the actual wedding itself. I think just the fact, and I think, hold on to that. And if you can show by your happiness that actually what other people may say to you, to other people, or even just behind your back, it doesn't matter. You've got two people that are looking forward to having their wedding and spending the rest of their lives together. So it really doesn't matter about what his family might be.
Do you think that though two people from different cultural backgrounds, it is more difficult to marry?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because, yeah, it depends what they're coming with. Now, I think Lara's actually on kind of a winning ticket, really, because, as I, you know, keep emphasising, you've got two people that love each other, and that's the most important thing. But it doesn't always kind of, you know, use that cliche, love isn't always enough, and sometimes it isn't, because there's pressures. There doesn't sound like any with Lara, which is good.
What sort of pressures could people face?
Well, you know, what are you going to do? How's the wedding going to be? What's the ceremony going to be? What's your children going to be? Do you promise to bring them up in this religion or that culture or something?
You've got to discuss everything.
Absolutely. And you can meld, and you can get together, and you can have, you know, nice, you know, when I got married to my husband, it was a family tradition that his uncle, who's a Catholic priest, would marry everybody.
So were you Catholic?
No.
Right, so you married a Catholic, practicing, quite a serious Catholic, if there's a priest in the family.
My husband wasn't, but yes, but the rest of the family are. And it was just the practical thing. And I thought it was quite a nice thing. But I remember we went out and had lunch with his uncle beforehand, and he said, you know, one of the things he has to say, because that's the deal of being a Catholic priest, is any people that you marry, you have to kind of make sure that you get a sort of like promise, if you like, that any children will be brought up as Catholics. And we kind of, you know.
Did you say yes just to keep the peace?
No, I think he, you know, he was a priest and a, you know, a very wise man of long, long standing, and he wasn't going to, but he had to say it because that was the deal. That was part of the deal. So he had to say it. And, you know, we've had three children. None of them have been Catholics, and, you know, everything's fine. So
they go to Catholic school?
No, they've all gone to C of E school, actually.
Has there been anything because of him being Catholic? Has there been anything that's ever been questioned in your marriage?
No, not between us. No, not really. No, because he, you know, as I say, he's not a practicing Catholic. Yeah. It might be different if he was. But you can still have two people from completely, completely different cultures, background, religions, whatever. And as long as they kind of love each other, and that's the most important thing.
What's love?
Oh, that's a very subjective question, isn't it? And it's different for different people. Mm. But back to Laura's case, she can answer that herself. What is love? Wanting to spend the rest of her life with this guy that she's going to marry. The wedding is one day. That's all it is. And all right, she might have to tolerate people sitting in a corner being grumbly and moany because it's not quite what they wanted. But it doesn't matter. She's got the rest of her life with the person that she loves. So, you know, it's different for different people. People say that they fall in love all the time. Some people say, I've only ever loved one person. So it's different. It's different for different people, and where you come from as well, your background, how you were treated, how you were parented, what your roles were. These are all the things that come into that kind of, can I be loved as well? So, good luck to Laura.
So to be loved, you've got to, what's the key to being loved?
Well, I think one of the first things is you've got to love yourself. Mm. You know, again, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but it is true. If you can kind of really love, you don't have to be in love with yourself, but if you can just kind of have some attributes that you're very keen on or fond of, or, you know, anything at all, that's the first thing, because then you can let other people in. And that's the key, because some people don't. They can't let people in. Mm. And then you've got some people that are a bit, I don't know.
What's that thing, can't let people in? Because someone sprung straight to my mind. Yeah. Obviously, I'm not going to say who. And she just doesn't seem to be able to let people in. What's that about?
It's protection. It is. It's often,
so she's been hurt.
Yeah. And it could be that, not necessarily in a romantic relationship, she could have been hurt. You know, there's probably something probably within her family that have gone on there, that she's a perception that something has gone wrong. And when I say perception, because it's not always the truth, but somebody might perceive it as that. So, you just build a wall around yourself because you think, well, if nobody can penetrate that wall, they can't get to me, so I can't be heard. But
that's very lonely behind the wall.
It is, totally. That's exactly it. So she's kind of got to, test it out, put her foot in the water and just see if actually this isn't as bad as I thought, and learn to live with,
Maybe that's like trust issues, and maybe you can think to yourself, well, I have got them, but I'm going to try and work around
them. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, accepting what you've got.
Absolutely, and accepting who you are. Mm. And we're all not perfect, and if there's things that somebody may need to do to slightly modify just something about themselves, that's fine, but you certainly don't change on behalf of somebody. People are who they are. And then there are people out there.
I spent a lot of years trying to change my husband, and that didn't really work.
It doesn't, does it? The oldest cliche in the book is that a leopard will not change its spots. And it's true. They can slightly get a bit paler and move around a little bit, but essentially a leopard is a leopard, and that's it. So we can't change other people.
So in a way, you've got to either accept them or put down your parameters of how the relationship would work.
Yeah, and there's all sorts of relationships that people love each other very, very much, but they might not even live in the same house as each other. They might not live in the same country as each other, but that's
part... Sounds great. I love that. Yeah.
But that's part of the deal, and that's part of what makes that relationship work, that they, have their...
I do think your own dwelling is like my ultimate dream, having your own house each. It would just be perfect.
As opposed to just your side of the bed.
Exactly, because then you could just be lovers, and that would be so romantic.
It would be, but I think Laura's in a good place, and she just has to kind of just, be polite, which I'm sure she will be, to the naysayers and the potential racists, because she's got the rest of her life with the man that she loves.
That's lovely and romantic, Jane.
It is.
So this is from Jill. Dear Dr. Jane, we are retired in our mid-60s and have two adult sons. The eldest is married with two children living near us, and the second one is divorced with three children. He had lived in a different part of the country, so only really saw them at holidays and birthdays. We'd always got on well with our second son's wife and was surprised when she told us she was divorcing him for his unreasonable behaviour. Last year, after what I think was suffering a bit of a breakdown, he came to live with us for what we thought was going to be for a short time until he was back on his feet. We helped him sort out his finances and paid off some of his debts, which he was grateful for. It's been 18 months later. He doesn't look like he's moving out any time. He's 35. He works in a shift job he loves. But that means we creep around during the day because he's sleeping in the day and he's on nights. He also can be quite irresponsible, such as leaving the doors unlocked when he goes out and gets grumpy if we say anything about it. We love him, but how much longer should we reasonably expect to stay with, you know, allow our son, grown up, very grown up son, to live with us?
Well, it's interesting that you struggle almost to say the word grown up, because I think that's almost what's jumping off the page there. There's a reversion. There's a part of him that's reverted back to, oh, just look after me. You are my parents. I've come back. I've had a tough time. There's been a bit of a breakdown. My relationship has, you know, gone skew-whiff. And, you know, does he see his children? I don't know. We didn't quite get that detail. But, you know, they see him as somebody that needs to be sorted out, looked after, rescued, to use our old friend. But then, actually, we've had enough of that. We've done that bit. We did that bit. Really, you know, you're 35 now, and we did that bit 20 years ago and beyond. So it's time for us now. And they're a bit fearful as well. They're fearful of his reaction. You know, like they say, he goes out, leaves the doors open, and when they say something which is not unreasonable, he gets grumpier. Reacts, but he gets grumpy because he knows actually he should be responsible enough to lock the door or windows or whatever it is. So you're instantly touching the thing that he knows that he should be doing, but then he's kind of going back to this kind of childlike state. And he doesn't sound so unreasonable that they can't have a proper chat with him and come up with some plan. That's the thing. And it's not actually we're going to chuck you out at the end of the week or something. It's about, right, you know, you're 35. We want you to get back on your feet. We want you to be happy. But we have to have some kind of time scale and a few kind of little house rules, such as locking up and being, you know, and when he's on nights, they creep around because they're being nice and kind of considerate towards him. But they shouldn't have to leave their entire time doing that. So there's something that there's the domestic stuff that needs talked about and sorting out. And probably as well, you know, she doesn't say it in the letter, but I imagine that suddenly she's gone back to doing all of his laundry and all of his, you know, all of his cooking and thinking, oh, right,
he's turned into mother's son.
Absolutely. What's the cereal he likes? Oh, that's right. I remember that. So there's a bit of her that obviously probably enjoyed that and the novelty of him being back. Mm. But that's well and truly worn off now.
I tell you what leaps out to me on this email, that thing about they were surprised about the unreasonable behaviour.
Yes. Now,
I picked up on that.
Yeah, and it would be interesting to get him to talk about that. Maybe not necessarily at first to them. Now, he's had a bit of a breakdown, so, you know, he's touching on, you know, what
they think he has. They're suspicious.
Yeah. Well, they probably have, you know, if his relationship...
Actually, they say, I think he had a breakdown. I think that he has. You know how the British can't say it.
No. Yeah. But then there's something about maybe he needs to actually seek a little bit of professional help as well, because I think that'll get him sort of like a different angle of where he is at the moment, because he might be literally sitting on the sofa feeling very sorry for himself.
Which you can do for a few weeks.
You can, and you can be indulged in that. Yeah. And, you know, mum can come along and feed you your cereal and put your feet up, and dad can run around and pay your bills and things. But there's something about he's an adult now, and he needs to be reminded that he's an adult. And I don't think he's been there before. And what, you know, the whole unreasonable, that is such a big term. You don't know what that might be. And sometimes people agree to divorce for whatever reason and cite that because that gives them a quick divorce, doesn't it? Rather than anything else. So.
Oh, really? Because it doesn't have to go into big kind of judgments.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. And if both parties are in agreement to that. But it's so we don't know, but there's something. And by 35, he's got reasonably, I think he had 2-3 children. Mm. So he's, you know, does he have connection with the children? Yes. Is there things going? These things all need to be sorted out. And it might be that Jill and her husband might be a little bit too close to sort it out. But there's an older brother. Don't know what the relationship there is like with him. But maybe they can capitalise on him to help. Not come along and start being an older brother and telling him what to do or anything. But to actually say,
go out for a pint.
Yeah, absolutely. Go out for a pint. What is it you're thinking about doing? Mm. You know, mum and dad are thinking about selling up, moving down to the coast or something like that. So he knows that this isn't a never-ending thing. I think he does, but they don't.
But it's a way of avoiding. Is he avoiding life?
Well, I don't know, because he's still working.
Yeah, and he does enjoy it.
Yeah, and he said, you know, she doesn't say what his job is or anything, but it involves shifts, so he's probably, you know, whatever it is, he likes his work. But yeah, he's having a step back, he's having a break, but actually he's had that. And now's the time to start the planning. And the planning might be, actually, in 6 months' time, of course, I'm going to have saved up enough, and I'll, you know, get my own flat and I'll start being independent again.
So it's a case of Jill and her husband saying, right, we've got to sit down together and we've got to work out what we want.
Yes, yeah. So if those two sit down together and make you know, and if they're not singing off the same hymn sheet to begin with, that's the first difficulty, because you don't want a situation of divide and conquer. So they've got to actually work out what they want and then either take it to him or take it to him with his brother, or give it to his brother to take to him or something, but not involve too many people, but as a separate thing, because he's had a bit of, you know, he's had some problems and issues, you know, encourage him to go and talk about them. And, you know, there's all sorts of things out there. There's free telephone advice. It might just be that he looks on forums and see how other people have dealt with breakups that have been difficult. But you've got to remember that the end of a marriage is as much of a bereavement as an actual technical bereavement is. When people, you know, a loss is a loss, no matter, you know, there are bigger losses and small losses and more compacting losses and things, but a loss is a loss. So it's not, it wouldn't be unreasonable for him to kind of, or them, you know, to start getting him to look and, you know, and actually acknowledge that, because maybe that's where he's not at the moment.
That's a really interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah, so it's important. But I think, you know, he doesn't sound too bad, but if he hangs around much longer, he probably, it'll only get worse. The situation will only get worse.
Okay, got one. Thanks so much. We've got one from Charlotte. Dear Dr. Jane, I'm contacting you as I'm useless at doing things just for me. I have a partner and three children aged 14, 16, and 20, and I should be finding myself again, but I always let myself down at the last minute. I plan to take up hobbies, meet friends for lunch, etc. But then I duck out at the last minute and sabotage any fun I could have. And I tell myself it's a bad idea as I have more important things to do. It's very interesting. It's echoing another one that we had a couple of months ago. I have not worked since the kids were little and pride myself in my perfect house. Making my house immaculate and looking after my partner and kids always seems to come first. Leaving the house gets less and less viable, unless it's for shopping or a chore for my family. How can I get out of this rut?
Oh, Charlotte, you've just created a massive, great big stick and you're bashing yourself over the head with it. So she's kind of saying, I should be doing this, I should be, and I go and put it. So she kind of, she creates situations.
I should.
Yeah,
I should.
And then she kind of, deep down knowing that she's not going to fulfill, you know, the dates, whatever it is that she's kind of arranged with her friends or anything, and she's backing out, but she's looking, you know, there's a bit of her that is looking for somebody to sort her out, and nobody's there, nobody's coming forward to do that. So she's left to herself to do it, and then she's found wanting, because actually I'm in a big circle here, I'm a bit useless, I can't even get out of the house, but the one thing I can do is I can make sure everything's tidy and neat for everybody else. So if I put their needs above mine, there's something about, they'll eventually see that I do that, and then they'll start doing it for me. Charlotte, wake up. It's not going to happen. You know, your oldest is 20 years old. If it's not going to be happening in the last 20 years, it's certainly not going to be happening now. And as they're moving and transitioning into adulthood, this could potentially get worse for Charlotte, because then she'll start having a void of what she will be doing for them as kids.
Empty nest will
start totally. So she needs to start really getting to grips with what she likes. Now, I always say to people, if you're a bit loose, you know, a loose end as to what exactly you want to do, either work-wise or hobby-wise, take literally 10 days, 2 weeks, and just have a pad of paper or do it on your phone or whatever, and write down anything at all that you find interesting. It can be as bizarre and as outlandish as possible. It could be sailing. It could be, you know, hairdressing. It could be, you know,
collecting antique coins.
Absolutely. Anything at all that you could either do as a work, and then you kind of look at your list and start thinking, well, no, I can't become an astrophysicist, that's ridiculous, or I can't fly, you know, whatever it is, and start getting it down, pare it down, so you actually get down to something like about two or three things. And then you can start looking at and doing your research, and you could think, well, actually, maybe one of the things that she likes doing is, I don't know, amateur dramatics or something like that. No, not to perform or anything, but she, you know, there's always the backstage stuff that people are always needed for and stuff. So she can start looking at it. Does she get encouragement from her family? That would be the interesting.
Doesn't sound like
no,
it
doesn't.
Does it? It sounds like they're all quite happy with her in a place.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we have to watch out for the sabotage. We have to watch out that suddenly they don't start putting little things, you know, very unconscious little things in her way. So, oh, I'm off to my Amdram tonight. Yeah. Oh, but Mum, you said you would do such
and also, I remember they could say something like, who do you think you are? What, you are Amdram. It's like they see you in a role, but why?
Yeah.
How your the mother is the mother and the wife is a wife. What, you're going to go and do something that's not your character.
Absolutely, because it'll take her away from them and they're happily to have her. Now again, let's not cut them, you know, to cast them in too bad a light, and we'll just go along the assumption that they might be, if not sabotaging, they might just be neutral, but that just means that she's got to ramp up her energy and her commitment
thing
to doing
is it
that.
Sounds like she turns it at the last minute, she, you know, she cancels things and she feels safer at home. I mean, do you think she's slightly getting agoraphobia?
She could be, because it's all about the anxiety of being out and I need to be where I am because then I'm safe. So, yeah, there could be that. So she needs to kind of do, you know, maybe a little kind of little bit of, you know, experiments, you know, behavioural experiments herself to see what she's like. So rather than actually
out of going out of your, because she's making her comfort zone really small, basically.
She is,
isn't
small
she?
And clean. So I think
because she said the house to be perfect.
So we've got maybe a touch of the OCD coming in there, which again is all under the anxiety umbrella. But what she needs to do is test it out, but without the pressures of, oh, I'm going to go and meet somebody or other. So she does it by herself. Can I get to the coffee shop in the high street and go and get myself a coffee and sit there for 10 minutes and learn to live with her anxiety if she really is anxious about leaving the house? And learn to live with it and mark it, you know, give herself a subjective score. Okay, at the moment, as I'm walking there, I'm feeling sort of like about 8, 9 out of 10. And the easiest thing to make my anxiety go away would be to turn around and go straight home. But learn to live with the anxiety.
Feel the fear and do it anyway,
Absolutely, because it will go down. It can't, you know, you cannot be at that anxious state all the time if she indeed is there. But test it out on her own, because, you know, that thing that I always say is about... So she's then starting to build up her portfolio of successes. So when her friend says, oh, come on, let's go to the pictures or go out and have a meal or something, rather than thinking, oh, the last 20 times that happened, I didn't go. And then I gave myself my big stick to hit my...
You're looking at failure.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you've got your successes to go, okay, it's going to be uncomfortable. I might not be absolutely really happy to begin with, but I know at the end of it, I will be happy. But hey, I've got this little kind of portfolio that I can dig into to go, well, you know, 3 days ago, you managed to go, you know, wherever it is, you went for a walk in the park and you said hello to the person that had the dog or something. So there's something about that. But I think she's got to look at her roles, and not only the roles that she's being given by her family of the cleaner, the cook and, you know, bottle washer and all that, but also the role that she's putting on herself, because it's blatantly not suiting her, because she wants to get out and she wants to do these things.
She said the word rut, so she knows she's in one.
She does. So she's got... And really... Get help, get professional help, because there's not actually, it's not coming from a family. So go out and have a look. And
maybe even a life coach or something.
Yeah, a life coach, or again, look on forums. There's plenty of stuff. You have to be quite kind of inventive about how you look for stuff if there's stuff online.
How do you look for stuff?
Well, you might say, so, you know, she could put something in like literally stuck in a rut help, and she'll get all sorts of things up, and that might be good. Or she might, you know, role ascribed to me as, you know, cook and cleaner at home, not happy. You'd be surprised kind of what kind of little things are out there. A lot of it is a lot of nonsense,
psychobabble, American stuff.
Absolutely, but there could be some good stuff that she could pull out, but not to get obsessed about, all right, I must do that and then look at that. You know, if it's not working, then go away. And have a look at life coaches. There's tons of stuff on the internet. If you look on YouTube, there's nice little instructional videos, all sorts of things. And some things will work and some things won't. So you might look at 10 videos, say, for instance, and you can take a little bit from each one and think, yeah, I could do that. I'm not in a million years am I going to do that. So there's something. So she's being active.
Sort of self-help.
Absolutely. She's being proactive. And if she wants to kind of get the all singing and dancing kind of therapeutic help, then, there's plenty of places.
And what sort of therapy? Because I was talking to you, Jane, about the word therapy. It's like, where do you start?
Oh, there's so many different modalities of therapy. And things like anxiety, agoraphobia, going out, that's kind of very well dealt with CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy, to a point. But you also have to look at the stuff that's leading into that, the social issues,
why
the dementia. Absolutely. Yeah. Where's it come from in the first place? So kind of that on one level, the actual nuts and bolts of, can I get out? Can I go here? Can I,
So that's like a physical
way of
dealing with
it. But also look at the stuff underneath.
as well. So what could there be underneath someone who does suffer from anxiety?
It could. It's often, in my experience, it's often this sense of self-worth that you doubt it, that you doubt that actually if I'm walking down the road and something terrible happens, I'll be able to cope, that, you know, in its worst situation. And then the anxiety symptoms take over and then you start going around in the anxiety loop. But it's often about how you've been brought up or how you perceive that you've been brought up, your relationships that you've had, your parental relationships, your sibling relationships, your school relationships. There's an awful lot of bullying that went on at school that implicate and make people, you know, feel so bad about themselves for years, years and years and years. And it's very dismissed. It's so easy to dismiss because, oh, well, school was such a long time ago. Why is it hanging around? But those things, when you're developing, have a huge, huge, or can have a huge impact. So, you know, everybody's got their own school experiences, some good, some bad, some kind of in between. But they all do, to a larger or lesser extent. They are, you know, they kind of help to form the person, their character, their ability to cope, their ability to take the ambiguity, their ability to, you know what they want. So it all matters. What goes on in, you know,
early years
is hugely important. You know, even back to kind of, you know, babyhood and attachments and all sorts of things. You know, it's a very complicated business.
But you can get sorted, can't you, Jane? That's all I want to know.
No, you can. In the right hands, if you really want to delve into it, you really, really can. And you know, and what the idea of any therapy is that you are your own best therapist. Nobody knows you better than you. So your first port of call has to be honesty. So when she's kind of cooking and tidying and doing all those things, excuse me, and kind of getting a sense of, you know, satisfaction from that, but it's only sort of like 50% because the rest of her wants to be doing something else, she needs to be honest with herself. And one of my tips about that, you see, she seems to probably spend a lot of time doing the cleaning. Yeah. So while she's doing that, which is using one hemisphere of her brain, she can use the thinking side and she can start kind of doing a little bit of self-verbalization.
So what sort of thing?
So things like, you know, say she was making a bed or something, you can do all these things on autopilot, so you don't really have to think about them too much. Okay, what is it I'm thinking now? Why am I upset? What is it the thing that I want to do? Hearing yourself say words stops them being thought, you know, ideally, or writing them down.
Say it out loud.
Say it out loud, yeah. So, you know, say talking to yourself or self-verbalisation, you know, to give it its fancy turn, is hugely, hugely, you know, we've been doing it for hundreds of years.
So tell me the sort of thing. So you're making a bed.
You're making a bed and you're a bit hacked off or something or other, and you kind of go, right, okay, right, what is it I'm annoyed about? Okay, oh, I don't know, the postman disturbed me when I was sitting down having my cup of coffee or something. Right, why does that annoy me? Oh, it's because actually it's the first time I've been able to sit down. Why is it the first time I've been able to sit down? Because I've been running around for everybody else. Why am I running? You know, do you see what I mean? You're kind of linking back rather than in a loop. You're going back to, and then you'll end up coming back often to the same point, which is, okay, this is the role I've got. This is the kind of conditions I'm in this role.
Yeah, like quite often when I'm taking the washing out, I'm quite angry and anxious. Yeah. And I think, well, why? It's probably because I think I should be doing something else that's more interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're on the planet for a finite space of time, and who wants to be hanging washing out?
The trouble is, it is my job.
It's got to be done, absolutely. But there's something about that role we give ourselves as well that people then quickly jump onto as well. That's handy. You're going to do the washing. You're going to do the rubbish.
Yeah, like my husband's never learnt to work the washing machine. He does every other thing. He's very good at dishwasher.
Right, okay. So, but that's kind of become your role. Yeah, but, you know, maybe it's time for him to learn to do the washing machine.
I think that's a really good time to stop.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming to Radio Gorgeous.
You've just given
such brilliant advice. And for you out there, listeners, do contact Jane because she's really up for all your problems, any problem, small or large. So you contact her at info@radiogorgeous.com or you can contact us at Twitter @radio_gorgeous or you can contact her at Facebook/radiogorgeous. And if they want to contact you personally, then how do they contact you, Jane?
Okay, so they can do it either via Twitter, which is @jmccartney.com, or is it, no, @drjmccartney.com, or they can, no, sorry, Twitter.
Yeah.
Sorry, editor. So it's at Twitter, at Dr. Jane McCartney, or they can find my webpage, which is drjane.co.uk.
Thank you so much for coming into Gorgeous Wellbeing.
You're welcome. See you again.
This is a Radio Gorgeous production for Radio Gorgeous 2017. For more information, go to radiogorgeous.com.